Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the University City Council together to order on January 14th at 6:33 p.m. Ms. Reese, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay.
Present.
Councilmember Carr.
Present.
Councilmember McMahon.
Here.
Councilmember Hales.
Here.
Councilmember Cusick.
Here.
Councilmember Smotherson. Mayor Crowe.
Here. Thank you very much. The agenda was already approved during the study session. There were no changes to it. We have no proclamations this evening. You have before you the approval of the minutes from the December 10th, 2018 regular session. If everyone has had a chance to read those, may we have a motion to approve? Motion by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Hales. Discussion? Hearing no discussion. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. As mayor, I need to make the appointments to the Loop Special Business District meeting. Joe Edwards, Mike Alter, and Steve Stone are nominated to the LSBD. May I please have a second? Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any discussion? Mr. Cusick.
I'm going to defer to Ms. Carr first. She had her light on first. I'd like for her to go first.
Oh, I apologize. I looked left instead of right. Ms. Carr?
So, thank you both. So the Loop Special Business District is kind of unique. It's something that we established, but it operates much like a commission and a board. It is not a not-for-profit. It is not independent of the city. In fact, it is actually a governmental entity and therefore must follow all laws pertaining to governmental entities, including the Sunshine Law. And over the past few years, this organization has not functioned as it should have, has not functioned as a commission type. And in fact, there's nothing in the ordinances that say that they can't elect it. And out of respect for Mayor Crowe, I am going to vote as a slate, but I need to say that one of the members is not only in the board of the LSBD, he's on the board of the CID in the city, on the board of the Transportation District, the Trolley Transportation District, and on the board of the Trolley Company. And so there is at least a potential for conflict of interest. Meaning not so much the taking of money, but more what organization are you actually representing? And so what I would like to see going forward, especially with the expenditures of some money this year that came out of the LSBD, essentially to advertise for the opening of the trolley, I would like to see that monies are no longer transferred interjurisdictionally, and by that I mean not just to the city of St. Louis for the east side, but also not to the other quasi or governmental entities. Just understanding that the CID on the east side is a not-for-profit, not a governmental entity, and that the others, I believe, are also not-for-profit. I may be incorrect about that. So what I would like to see from all board members on the Loop Special Business District is that they operate as the boards and commissions typically do, and that they keep foremost in their mind how important it is, the work that they're doing, that they actually represent the city of University City, and that their decisions are advisory to council, that they must submit a report once a year, as the ordinance says, and that they must also submit a detailed line item budget. So I will be voting for all members on Mayor Crowe's slate, but I think it is important that going forward that this board understand their true function. Thank you.
Mr. Cusick.
I would like to concur with everything that Ms. Carr has said, and I would like to add that there does seem to be some there's a lack of demarcation between the actions of this board and mixing some of the actions with the East Loop CID. For an example, the executive director that the LSBD is paying to a portion of the salary to, it's not clear what those functions, when those functions are being carried out for the benefit of University City versus the East Loop CID, and I would like to see that this board demarcate that more. They host joint meetings for the East Loop CID as well as the LSBD, which concerns University City, and I would like to see this board try and put a little more definition onto which areas they're talking about when they are making decisions that seem to affect either or both, and that there does seem to be the ability for some conflict of interest there. I've not seen any conflict of interest, but I'm just saying that there needs to be some demarcation so that we don't have that appearance. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson. A nomination.
Got it. I'm sorry. I just want to thank Roger McFarlane and John Owens first. And also, Roger McFarlane and John Owens are nominated for reappointment to the Board of Adjustments.
Thank you very much. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. McMahon.
I'd like to nominate for reappointment to the Parks Commission, Kevin Taylor.
Is there a second? Mr. Smotherson. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We now move to the swearing-in portion of our meeting. I believe Ms. Hummel is here.
You want me to turn sideways? Okay. Thank you. All right.
I,
Lisa Hummel,
do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri and the charter and ordinances of University City.
That I will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri and the charter and ordinances of University City.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I am about to assume with impartiality and justice.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I am about to assume with impartiality and justice.
Thank you, Ms. Hummel. I do not apologize. I do not know whether Julie Brill is Texaria is here this evening. I don't believe that she is, so we will take care of that swearing in at a later date. We will now move into the citizen participation portion of our program. The first 15 minutes is allocated at this time. When you come to the microphone, please give your name and address. You're given 5 minutes to speak. And then if we do not get through everybody during this portion, you will be then called upon at the second portion of citizen participation. For those of you who may be new to our meetings, there are sign-in sheets over by the door that if you'd like to speak, please sign and put down the appropriate information. We also have a number of people that are speaking on particular agenda items. The first public comment tonight is from Ms. Sonia Pointer.
Hi, Sonia Pointer, 8039 Canton Avenue. I'm against the city's proposed redevelopment at Olive and 170. What little is known about this project has negative impacts for low to moderate or fixed income residents, as well as people of color and small businesses. The City Council and City Manager have not involved the residents of this community in the planning process for the proposed redevelopment, and more specifically the Third Ward, since this is where the project is going and supposed to assist. I want to address some comments that I heard at the council meeting on November 12th. I'll start with Jeff Hales. Jeff said that he has received more emails about feral cats than he has opposition to this project. And you just have to wonder, what was Jeff doing when all of those people, many who were black residents in the Third Ward, stood up at the TIF Commission meetings and opposed this project at the TIF meetings and up other public meetings? What were you doing when those residents were speaking, playing Pokemon on your phone? Or maybe just looking at emails about the feral cats? It is telling that you pay more attention to emails about animals than you do the voices and concerns of black residents in the Third Ward. Then I want to move on to Terry Crow. At that same meeting on November 12, 2018, Terry said that usually when people say we, it is really I. And I really took that to be disrespect directed towards me as I read off what was requested at the Third Ward meetings involving this development. I find it troubling that Terry, who represents the whole city, would not do his due diligence and make sure that all voices of this community were heard and acted on. What were you doing during those meetings? This community, what were you doing when those meetings were being conducted, hosted, and attended by three council members, the city manager, as well as staff? What were you doing when those tables were being facilitated by city staff, and city staff heard comments and requests from many residents, not just I, and wrote them down? They requested things such as lowering taxes, freezing taxes. This wasn't just me. It was multiple residents. And then while I'm questioning leadership, I also want to speak to my council members in my Third Ward. You were absolutely silent, Wayne Smotherson and Stacey Clay, at this meeting, when people said, basically tried to discredit the things that I said, the things that I read that were written down by city staff. I expect you to speak up on behalf of the residents in the Third Ward. I expect all of you to speak up on behalf of the residents in the Third Ward and the entire city. What's the point of those meetings if you're not going to implement any of the things that we request at the meetings? Is it just for a checkbox or to look good in the media? It doesn't look good to the residents of this community. I want to move on to Paulette Carr. What she said at that same meeting made me feel that she absolutely does not care about the people who have been historically discriminated against and impacted, left out of city development and planning. She definitely cared when it served her purposes. In 2017, Paulette stood up to Metropolitan Sewer District for trying to uproot a black community, a low to moderate income community, also known as an environmental justice community by the federal government. Paulette used environmental justice as a way to push back against MSD and supported the NAACP, writing a letter to EPA on behalf of those black and low income residents. Paulette said, why would MSD want to have those raw sewage tanks in the area that is slated for redevelopment? And it was at that point that I realized that me and her had the same agenda to stop the MSD project, but not the same motive. My motive has and always will be to protect vulnerable communities from the machine of displacement and bigoted practices, whether by way of raw sewage tanks or business developments that would price them out of the neighborhoods that they live in. After hearing her brag that her sister-in-law, who is white with Italian roots, would be relocating to the Third Ward, you have to question what her motive really is. Now, I gave everyone the problem. You do the math.
Your time has ended. Next request to speak is from Tom Jennings. The agenda or not? John. That's okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, Tom Jennings, 7055 Forsyth. Just thought it would be appropriate when I was here the last time I spoke to the problem of our leaf collection on Forsyth, and I just wanted, if I can speak up and complain, I can also say thank you. We know that the council and city manager probably arranged it for the extra pickup, and they really did a nice job. They came out and really cleaned it up, and I can definitely tell you now with all the snow down and all the stuff, if they'd have been there, we would have had another major problem. Just wanted to thank all of you for getting it done, and it looked a whole lot nicer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Mr. Carl Hoagland.
Carl Hoagland, 7166 Pershing Avenue. I'm here as the chair of the Parks Commission and a citizen of the University City. And what you have received is are the priorities that the Parks Commission worked on and agreed upon for projects for parks and recreation. I have emailed you a copy of this previously, but I wanted to make a few comments. We put this together over a September, October, and November period. We discussed each one of the projects. At the November meeting, we had a unanimous agreement to approve all of these projects. We divided them into three categories. And so if you look at pages, and we're not going to go through each one of these, but if you look at, I believe it's pages 5, 6, and 7, the three categories are projects that are over $250,000 that are usually funded by county funding. The other project, the second category, is projects over $100,000, and the third category is less than $100,000. We felt that that was a way that the city council and the city manager could make decisions in terms of which projects to fund. So we present this to you, and we look forward to it for you using this in your budget. We have presented this in November so it can be used in your budget, and we look forward to you funding as many projects as there are possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you as well. Our next request to speak is from Ms. Lisa Brenner.
Good evening. Lisa Brenner, 507 North Central. I'm here on behalf of the school board to give an update. I want to start. We had a busy December month. First, we recognize our outstanding journalism program, including our new broadcasting program, which you can view on the district's YouTube channel. We also recognized All Nations Church and Pastor Chris Pavola for their ongoing support of our schools and providing 150 Thanksgiving meals to families in need. And finally, we recognize Dr. Tracy Hines and Ms. Jacqueline McBride for being awarded the IOTA Phi Lambda Apple for the Teacher Award. The board nominated senior Alana Jenkins and awarded her $250 to be the district's candidate for the Missouri School Board Association John T. Belcher Scholarship. We also acknowledged the great contribution of the University City Education Foundation, who just awarded over $20,000 and 24 educator grants for projects including a learning garden, robotics, Shakespeare experience, and clothing boutique. The board approved an update on the budget. Our revenues and expenditures are within the expected range. We continue to work towards maintaining over 15% fund balance despite the lack of revenue growth and higher costs. We also approved the auditor's report, and once again, our external auditors have found the district's financial state and federal record keeping to be exemplary. Excuse me. We heard from parents, our Parents as Teachers program. We currently employ two half-time educators who made 778 home visits to families with children 0 to 3. 77% of those visits were made to high-needs families, which meets the state requirements for our program. We do recognize, however, that we need to add another half-time educator to improve our ability to meet the home visit frequency. The Board of It also approved the English Language Learner Program report, which is a federal program. During that report, we learned that Barbara C. Jordan has enough qualifying English language learner students to be measured against other schools. These English language learner students scored in the highest 10% of schools in the state of Missouri. And finally, we changed our calendar so that we do have no school now on election days in April and October. With this change in a snow day, the current last day of school has moved to Friday, May 24th. That might move again with the snow. We don't know coming up. Last, the board invites the city council and community to two upcoming events. This Thursday, January 17th, we will have our annual Martin Luther King celebration honoring Reverend Dr. E.G. Shields, Jr., and presenting our keynote speaker, Mary Beth Tinker. And then on Monday, February 25th, we invite the community to our State of the District meeting, where we will review the annual release of state performance data. The state performance data is due to be released in the beginning of February. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Carolyn Cathcart. I hope I said that correctly.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Carolyn Calicut. I'm the property owner of 7328 and 7326 Dartmouth. And my concern is with the sewer lateral program. I am aware that things have changed on that. But my question is, when the guy came out to give me the pictures and the videotape, I did notice that my sewer lateral is connected to the 7330. And also, I had two breaks. So I did notice in the documentation that had come out that the average for the sewer lateral to be repaired is like $2,500 to $3,000, and mine was over that. So my concern is, by me having a duplex, is that dollar amount, the $2,500, is that per duplex since I had two breaks? So I do also have pictures and the information that was given to me by the representative that did my work. He was from the listing that's on the website. So he was one of the people that was on the website to do the actual the filming and all of that. So that's one of my concerns that I have tonight. So if you need to see the document, I do have it with me tonight.
Thank you. I'm sure staff will be contacting you regarding your questions. Our last request to speak at this time is Aaron Ginsburg.
Aaron Ginsburg, 430 West Point Court. Honorable Mayor and City Council, I have some great news to share about University City's TNR advocates and our community kitties. In the past 24 months, UCity TNR volunteers have helped trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return 24 University City feral cats, and we've successfully placed 6 UCity born kittens into rescues. UCity TNR is currently aware of more than 109 feral cats in our community, and we are actively educating our neighbors about the benefits of TNR. Our dedicated workers and our dedicated volunteers have been working hard, even over Christmas and New Year's Eve, to get UCity's feral cat population under control. On January 2nd, 3 of UCity's TNR advocates met with Ms. Williams, Mr. Scott, and Mr. Blizzard in the Community Development Department. And during our positive and productive discussion, we showed city staff how to identify a TNR cat. One ear is tipped, and we shared examples of TNR ordinances which effectively legalize trap, neuter, return with minimal regulation. We also shared the ICMA's guide to managing community cats and many news articles and successful TNR programs in St. Louis and throughout the country. Ms. Williams graciously offered to introduce a TNR ordinance for the City Council's consideration, and we look forward to assisting the department as it drafts legislation. UCity's Community Development Department also invited us to share TNR information with residents at the annual pet clinic in April. We appreciate the willingness of UCity's Department of Community Development and their staff to partner with us to humanely and effectively control our feral cat population. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now move to the public hearings. We have a number of public hearings this evening, and as many of you may know, we sort of open and close them relatively quickly if someone does not want to speak. I'd like to open the public hearing on zoning map amendment for 1167 Rimley Court, University City, from GC General Commercial to SR Single Family Residential at 659. Ms. Reese, do we have any requests to speak?
No, not at this time.
If there are no requests to speak, I will close the hearing at 659. The next public hearing we have is for text amendment of Chapter 400, Article 5, Division 10, amateur radio antennas, towers, parabolic reflector antennas, and telecommunications antennas, towers, and support structures. Ms. Reese, do we have any requests to speak?
None at this time.
I apologize. I opened the hearing at 7 o'clock, and there are no requests to speak. Close the hearing at 7 o'clock. Next public hearing that we will open at 7 o'clock is text amendments to Section 400.3080 in Article 8, Division 3, Nonconforming Lots and Records, and Section 400.1020 in Article 5, Division 1 of the University City Zoning Code, text amendment, wireless communication. Are there any requests to speak?
There are none.
Hearing no requests to speak, I will close the hearing at 7 o'clock. Our next public hearing that will open at 7 o'clock is text amendment to Section 400.3090 in Article 8, Division 3 of the University City Zoning Code. Ms. Reese, are there any requests to speak?
There are none.
Hearing no requests to speak, I will close the public hearing at 7 o'clock. I kind of hoped to go to 7:01, but it didn't roll over. So we will. there's nothing on the consent agenda. I will now turn to the city manager for the city manager's report.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, I'd like to take the liberty of introducing our new assistant to the city manager. She is also the director of communications, Allison Bamberger. So we recently stole her from the county, and we think that it was a very good find for us. So we're very pleased with her and think she'll do a great job. All of the media people that have been calling me, now you have a person to contact. The first agenda item is calls for a five-minute update from the Stormwater Task Force. Mr. Alplasson, are you going to introduce this item?
Hello, Mayor and Council members. The Stormwater Task Force has been actively working on a lot of projects for the last 14 months. They are several members of the task force are here today. Mr. John Thiemann has a report, a status report to share with you, and I'd like to turn it over to him. He's a co-chair of this task force.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Oh, my name is John Thiemann. I live at 854 Barclay Square, and more to the point here, I co-chair the Stormwater Task Force. Mayor Crow, honorable members of the City Council, my fellow citizens of University City. With Resolution 2017-10, the Stormwater Task Force was established on the 26th of June, 2017. The task force is composed of 15 members. The appointed members are engineers and scientists who bring technical expertise and scholarship to the work, as well as members who are knowledgeable citizens, often folks who are personally affected by stormwater. To comply with the authorizing resolution, the Stormwater Task Force focuses on stormwater quality problems rather than quality problems. While this may sound a bit esoteric, the distinction is this. The Stormwater Task Force focuses on flooding and related problems in University City per se. We do not address ecological concerns. Such concerns are the province of regulatory agencies at the county, state, and federal levels. To give a simple example, we worry about flooding on Wilson Avenue while the EPA worries about contaminants. To accomplish our goals, we divide our efforts into two phases. We are now engaged in phase one, the collection of data, the evaluation of that data, and the prioritizing of stormwater problems in University City. This level of systemic collection and the evaluation of such data has never been done before in this city. To be efficient in phase one, we subdivide the task force into the following six subcommittees: survey of residents, historical data, the review of neighboring community stormwater approaches, the review of stormwater ordinances and codes, flood early warning system, and funding for the stormwater projects. Through two efforts, we have thus far obtained approximately 250 survey responses. These surveys, combined with other sources, for example, MSD data, are yielding significant results. In this case, the evaluation of the results is ongoing. At this time, survey results indicate that the public is primarily concerned with stormwater entering their homes, street and yard ponding, stream flooding, and stream bank erosion. The survey also identifies specific places, neighborhoods, streets, and properties which are at risk for water damage. We will combine our survey with the historical data, site visits, public open house meetings, all of which will be used to evaluate and prioritize the stormwater problems. We will then develop a range of recommended improvements. We anticipate that the open house public meetings will be crucial to our work. A particular concern to the committee is the development of an early warning system. River rise can be astonishingly swift flowing, and in a word, torrential. The River De Pere can rise as much as 20 feet in an hour, with a flow of as much as 10 miles per hour. I was sitting there thinking about this room, and it occurred to me that something that with this kind of flood would go from that end of the room to the other end of the room in about 2 seconds. You can't outrun this. We are not being alarmist when we remind folks that on Wilson Avenue, two of our neighbors drowned because of flooding. The task force will make recommendations for the development of an early warning system, something we consider one of our highest priorities. The preparation of a stormwater master plan is our phase two. At this time, we anticipate that the master plan will make recommendations that involve public works projects, buyouts, a proposed ordinance that includes building code changes, and an early warning system for residents who live close to the River De Pere in the Englehorn Creek. We also will examine funding such as grants, citywide taxes, special neighborhood taxes to implement the recommendations. We expect the evaluation and the preparation of our master plan will take the next 4 to 6 months. During this time, the Stormwater Task Force plans to evaluate recent surveys, combine survey responses with other sources of stormwater complaints, such as reports to the Metropolitan Sewer District, reports to University City, as well as relevant anecdotal evidence. Make site visits to assess stormwater problems, identify a range of responses that lead to appropriate forms of mitigation, hold open house public meetings to discuss a range of responses and suggestions for mitigation, and learn the preferences of U City residents and the business community, update responses gathered during phase one, prepare a stormwater master plan, which will be reported to the City Council at the conclusion of phase two. Finally, this report would be remiss if it did not reference the hundreds of hours of volunteer work done by members of the task force. University City is profoundly fortunate in that it can draw upon the expertise of engineers, the scholarship of scientists, as well as the civic mindedness of so many concerned citizens. This report would also be remiss if we did not thank those civil servants who have worked to further our endeavors. Mr. Mayor, honorable members of the council, on behalf of the Stormwater Task Force, we also commend you for your attention to this problem and simply thank you for your ongoing support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much to you and to all of the dedicated members of our community who volunteered their time to put this report together for us. Thank you.
Honorable Mayor, the next item on the agenda is ask Council to consider approval of a parking space lease agreement with Washington University that would enable WashU to comply with our zoning codes. The terms of the code include the lease of 44 spaces from our parking garage for $178 per space. That would be for the term of it is a 10-year agreement with 2 5-year options. So the total amount per year would be $92,400 per year. And I have City Attorney John Mulligan here if you would like a more detailed explanation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rose. Is there, first off, is there a motion to approve? Motion by Ms. Carr, the second by Mr. Smotherson. Is there a discussion or any questions to ask either the city manager or the city attorney? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We will now move on to unfinished business. Ms. Reese, would you please do the second reading of Bill number 9374?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City, Missouri, relating to zoning districts established pursuant to Section 400.070 thereof and enacting in lieu thereof a new official zoning map, thereby amending said maps so as to change the classification of property that is located within the city limits of University City at 1167 Rimley Court, from GC, General Commercial District, to SR, Single Family Residential.
Thank you very much. May we have the third reading?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City, Missouri, relating to zoning districts established pursuant to Section 400.070 thereof and enacting in lieu thereof a new official zoning map, thereby amending said map so as to change the classification of property that is located within the city limits of University City at 1167 Rimley Court from GC, General Commercial District, to SR, Single Family Residential.
Thank you, Ms. Reese. Having the second and third reading, is there a motion to be approved? A motion by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Mr. Clay. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Carr?
Aye.
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick?
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson?
Aye.
Councilmember Clay?
Aye.
Mayor Crow?
Aye. May we please have the second reading of Bill number 9375?
An ordinance amending Chapters 100 and 505 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City, Missouri, related to regulations for right-of-way management and enforcement regulations.
May we have the third reading?
An ordinance amending Chapters 100 and 505 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City, Missouri, related to regulations for right-of-way management and enforcement regulations.
Thank you, Ms. Reese. Having had the second and the third readings, is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. McMahon. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick?
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson?
Aye.
Councilmember Clay?
Aye.
Councilmember Carr?
Aye.
Mayor Crow?
Aye. Thank you very much. May we please have the second reading of Bill number 93?
Mayor, this is what I spoke to you about.
Yes.
If I may.
Yes. I apologize.
On Bill 9376, special counsel has made a few minor changes. Council has before it those changes in red line with an amended bill reflecting those changes. Councilmember Carr introduced Bill 9376, so it would be appropriate to ask her if she's okay with the minor changes that the bill as amended be filed, and then the council may thereafter give second and third readings, debate it, and then vote.
Ms. Carr, you are amenable to first reading. So may we have now the first reading of Bill number 9376 with text change. Same.
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the University City Municipal Code to adopt regulations related to communications antennas and support structures.
May we have the second reading?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the University City Municipal Code to adopt regulations relating to communications antennas and support structures.
May we have the third reading?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the University City Municipal Code to adopt regulations related to communications, antennas, and support structures.
Thank you very much. There's been a first, second, and a third reading of Bill number 9376 with text changes provided by the city attorney. Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Clay. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick?
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson?
Aye.
Councilmember Clay? Councilmember Carr?
Aye.
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
Mayor Crow?
Aye. Thank you very much. We'll now move into new business. Who would like to introduce Bill number 9377? Ms. Carr, may we have the first reading of Bill number 9377?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City relating to zoning by amending Sections 400.3080, non-conforming lots of record, and Section 400.1020, lot area and with exceptions relating to district regulations containing a savings clause and providing a penalty.
Thank you very much. Who would like to introduce Bill number 9378? Mr. Hales, may we have the first reading?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City relating to zoning by amending Section 400.3090, non-conforming structures relating to district regulations containing a savings clause and providing a penalty.
Thank you very much. Who would like to introduce Bill number 9379? Mr. Smotherson, may we have the first reading?
An ordinance approving a redevelopment agreement and district project agreement in connection with the Olive Boulevard Commercial Corridor and Residential Conservation Redevelopment Plan.
Thank you very much. We have a number of requests to speak on Bill number 9379, and we will be calling each one up in order. Please understand that there will be a five-minute time limit for each speaker. Also, to all the speakers, please recognize that no vote will be taken this evening. This is simply the introduction of the bill. First request to speak on Bill number 9379 is Ms. Sonia Pointer.
Sonia Pointer, 8039 Canton Avenue. Since the council has been wrapped up reading emails about feral cats, I decided to do your jobs for you and that of the city manager. I went through videos of the public meetings, and I'll just read a few of the comments because obviously I can't go over hours and 5 minutes. Jackie Hutchinson, Third Ward resident, she said that she hadn't heard anything that would make her feel that TIF funding needs to be used. And she said, what is the timeline for funds to come back to the Third Ward? Where are the stats to show that this is the best project? She said that she is not at all convinced that this is the best project. Those concerns haven't been addressed. Vera Carter Smith, Third Ward resident, said, I'm concerned about eminent domain. And I have to tell you, I did take a peek at the redevelopment agreement, haven't been able to fully read it. One of the first things that I saw is that eminent domain will not be used except as authorized by the city council. Come on, stop playing with words. That means that you all will use eminent domain as part of this project. Julia McClure, not in the Third Ward. She says she's not in the Third Ward, but close enough to smell it, and she thinks the project stinks. How long will it take to get the money back to the third ward? She's concerned about dirt, construction, traffic. She does not want a hotel that close to her home. She's against the project. Norma Foster, third ward resident, says she's lived in her home for 42 years. She can't stand the idea that she will live in dirt and does not want her property taxes raised, which is something that the city council and the city has tried to get around. The topic about property and real taxes in this city and how it will impact the most vulnerable people in our city. You all have been skipping and dancing around that, and you keep trying to muddy the waters with that and the use of eminent domain. Do something to protect the residents in this community. This is why we should be involved in the development and planning process from the beginning. Jane Zinni, third ward resident. She wants to know when Novus goes away, what is the guarantee that the rest of the project will be completed? And by the way, at the last third ward community meeting, many people said, what happens if Novus doesn't come through? When are you all going to address that? Don Jackson, third ward resident, said that when he looks at this project, he thinks about what happened in other black communities that receive redevelopment, that receive development, such as Meacham Park. It disappeared with the development. Says that people who live in the ward should have had input a year ago when this project was first in the works. And I can go on and on and on, but I'm limited on time. I will speak on what Sandra Whitley said. She said that she is 100% against this project. She's third ward resident, and that this is a black and white issue, and that anyone who says differently is a liar. She said, you're taking 100% black homes, so why not 100% construction, black construction workers? And again, looking at the redevelopment agreement, you all are requesting, you said that Novus will, the developer will request that they implement some of these things in terms of jobs that they pick from people in our resident. Again, at the third ward meetings, people said that they want to guarantee that people will be hired from this community. Stop playing with words. I agree with Sandra, Ms. Whitley, that this is a race is a factor in this. But I don't think that it's exclusively about race. I think that when you look at the number of people who stood up in opposition to this project, mainly were black and from the third ward. The number of people who stood up in support of this project publicly at these meetings were white and mainly from the first and second wards. Race is a part of this. But I absolutely think that this is a class issue. This is absolutely a class issue. Those who are wealthy, those who are not wealthy or do not have higher incomes are the target of this project, just like the Metropolitan Sewer District project. Do you think that they would dare uproot homeowners where the wealthier residents in U-City stay near Delmore? Absolutely not. And just because a representative is black does not mean that they represent issues facing black people. There's a saying that goes, all skin folk ain't can folk. This is a class issue because those residents in the third ward who cannot afford to pay higher taxes will be forced to sell their homes just to sustain their living. And they will be replaced by people who can't afford to live here.
Your gentrification.
And I also want to leave on public record signatures that I took from 17 residents that opposed this project. They wanted documented on public record.
Thank you very much.
They said that the city has not updated its comprehensive plan with significant engagement with the residents of this community since 2005, has not engaged the community with all the details of this redevelopment TIF bills in writing, and has not presented the full redevelopment agreement for residents review and input, and has not allowed us adequate time, at least a month, to review these documents and ask questions. They asked that the city vote against the approval of these bills and redevelopment project at Olive and 170. And I ask for the city to go and do its job. I shouldn't have to go out and spend 8 hours out of my time to engage these residents. This is your job. I started to submit an invoice.
Ms. Pointer, your time has
expired.
As
a part of Mr. Rose's salary of $170,000, but I'll just keep it. I'll take it. I'll consider this in-kind service for my community.
We do hope that people will respect the rules of the City Council. I think it impacts the rest of the speakers as well. David Harris is our next speaker.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is David Harris. My address is 8039 Gannon Avenue. I'm here to speak about the redevelopment plan. And there are too many issues to be covered in 5 minutes, so I'll just try to highlight a few concerns that I hope will be discussed and considered. First, Section 2.3. When and why did the unconditional $10 million upon approval of the plan for the Third Ward and the unconditional $5 million at the same time or soon thereafter for the Olive Business District become $7.5 million sometime within the next maybe 3 years, if you look at the timeline that's set out there, $4 million from, quote, available revenues in the amount of $500,000 annually, and $3.5 million, quote, the city will commit other incremental revenues derived from RPA 1. The $4 million at $500,000 a year will take 8 years to bring into the city or to bring into the area. And it won't start immediately. It'll start after a year or two or three. The $3.5 million of incremental revenue, the only incremental revenue that I can think of is the sales tax that'll be coming from RPA 1. And if my calculations are correct, that's about 5 years of the expected 50% of the economic activity taxes. So I hope there is some discussion about when and why did the promise of that get changed to this particular structure. Second, a discussion about when and why in Section 3.1b did the unequivocal and often repeated promise that, quote, no eminent domain of owner-occupied single-family residential structures will be permitted get changed to include the qualifier, quote, except as determined by the City Council in its sole and absolute discretion. That exception swallows and negates the promise. Third, Section 3.9, there are several special development conditions, including hiring. That's a good start, but is that all there is? You heard from a lot of members of the community about various aspects of a community benefit agreement, other things that can come from this development. None of them are addressed in the redevelopment plan. Number four, there's Section 6.6 having to do with tax abatement. Why is there tax abatement now? Tax abatement was never discussed in any of the discussion before. Number five, Section 7.1, the developer's right of termination, and 7.3, the results of termination. The developer has a unilateral right to terminate, and there are no consequences. Be interesting to explain why there is no binding or security to either undo or complete whatever the developer has done. Section 7.5A gives the developer an almost unlimited right to assign the obligations under this agreement, with the city having absolutely no say in who it gets assigned to. Those are just some of the concerns of this agreement. There are others, but I wanted to highlight those.
Thank you very much. Our next request to speak is Patricia McQueen.
Hello, good evening. My name is Patricia McQueen. I live at 1132 George Street. Coming before the council today, did say that I haven't had time to read word after word of the redevelopment agreement, but I will say that what I have done, just going over it, that I believe that the residents have been listened to. There have been were multiple meetings from the TIF Commission. There were a Third Ward committee, Third Ward meeting, and I have a feeling that within this document, some of the concerns are in it. For example, the relocation assistance. I remember a speaker coming up saying that they didn't see where the relocation assistant plan is in here, the policy. Well, it was always there, and I see that it is reflected in this agreement. I also see in the ordinance that you're taking into consideration minority contracting. That was brought up by residents at the TIF meetings, and so it is in this agreement. I also see the first source employment. That is in the going to be in the ordinance, talking about UCD First Hiring Initiative. I think since that was brought up by residents, you have it in here. And also you're saying in RP1, the kind of businesses that I'm sure the Third Ward residents that are on the Western End would not like to see in the RP1, which is inflected in here, unless you allow it, like adult entertainment, adult bookcases, bookstores, pawn shops, payday loans, title loan, check cashing, and tattoo shops. So they don't have to worry about those kind of businesses that's going to be near them. I do want to point out two things because it keeps coming up time and time again about gentrification and this. I don't believe this development will present gentrification. There was an article that was in the Washington Post talking about the myths about gentrification. One myth is that gentrification causes widespread displacement. I do not believe that that's going to happen here because we are not a hot neighborhood. We're not like in Washington, D.C., and San Francisco, and New York, or even in some areas in St. Louis City. In fact, the St. Louis Business Journal put out an article about hot hoods, which you mean hot neighborhoods, the 25 neighborhoods with the most home sales in 2018. We weren't even listed. So that won't happen. Then it says sometimes about longtime residents hate gentrification. They don't hate it. What they are worried about is about taxes and about what's going to be moving next to them. And that is being addressed. They said homeowners stay usually to gain a windfall on the property that they already have. And so they will stay there. I don't think that they will be moving away. And one thing that is controversial and is the hot button and it's always put up, gentrifiers are white. They're not. A lot of what they've known in studies and finding that a lot of middle class Asians, blacks, and Latinos have moved into these neighborhoods. And when we look at the lots that are in the Third Ward close to the development, they're small. So no McMansions are going to be put in there, which will bump up the property taxes. It would probably be the second or third generations of the folks who are already there if they want to live in University City. And, in fact, the person who keeps coming up here probably is an example of that because that person not only owns a home, they own two others. They are a landlord. They are a landlord. So we want more of that happening, but you know, I wish that they would bring say the disclaimer of who they really are. And so with that in mind, and I know that my time is getting less, I will just say this one last thing about the gentrificators being of another race. Oh, I do want to bring up that the agreement is taking into consideration the Asian businesses that are on the north side, trying to see if we can help them move to the southern side when that goes up. So that will be something that will probably be brought up, I'm sure, today and then probably in when the agreement is brought up again in the next 2 weeks when you go to vote for it. Let me get back to the gentrificators, and this would be my last thing, and I will say. They said, looking at the 1990 and 2010 census, I found that neighborhood changes in predominantly black neighborhoods generally make these areas more attractive for middle-class black households. In fact, in his 2011 book, There Goes the Hood, Lance Freeman of
Ms. McClendon,
Columbia
you're close.
University, I'll end it. This is the last thing, found that the way that we talk about gentrification has tended to overlook the possibility that some of the neighborhood changes associated with gentrification might be appreciated by the prior residents. And so I want to end on that note. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, to all of our speakers, I hope that you'll be respectful of time. And if you need more time, it is usually the appropriate protocol to ask for more time, not to just continue speaking. Our next request to speak is Mr. Tom Sullivan.
Tom Sullivan, 751 Syracuse. I oppose a redevelopment agreement for the Isle of 170 development because I oppose the development. I think it's a terrible proposal. Even if I thought a development was a good idea for that location, I would not support this one. To tell all the residents of the affected area they are expendable and will be kicked out of their homes, and to tell the hardworking, diverse small business owners that they will be kicked out of their buildings, goes against the values that have long been held in University City. If the proposed development was put to a vote, it would be overwhelmingly defeated, which is why it wasn't put to a vote. The big lie about the development from the very beginning has been there would be no eminent domain except to acquire public storage on Olive. It was said over and over again by city officials. The policy was then changed. A few more times, and even more lies were told. The truth is that the developer can ask for the authority to use eminent domain whenever and wherever he wants, and he will get it. It's been confirmed by the redevelopment agreement. It was probably decided a long time ago, but kept covered up, along with so many other things about this proposed project, such as tax abatement. All the information put out by the city on the development sounds good, but none of it's believable. The St. Louis area is littered with failed projects, but have one thing in common. They were all promoted as terrific ideas. One of the biggest fiascos was in Sunset Hills with none other than the Novus Company, U-City's Olive 170 developer. I would not trust that outfit or its president. What is so absurd is that the project would destroy thriving businesses on the west end of the city that are nearly 100% occupied. The other end of the city, including the Loop, has dozens of storefront and commercial vacancies, and the city has failed to improve the situation. Among all the vacancies are the old Cicero's location in the Loop that has been vacant for a year and a half. Same for the old Bread Company location. So the same city officials who are failing so badly to do anything about the Loop and the east end of the city are now claiming the proposed development in Olive 170 will do great things. The proposed development is a bad deal for the people whose homes will be torn down. It's a bad deal for the business owners who will be kicked out of their buildings. It's a bad deal for University City and the University City School District. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Next request to speak is Aaron Ginsburg.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, my name is Erin Ginsburg. I live at 430 West Point Court. I'm speaking tonight because I have participated in every TIF Commission hearing. I've attended several of the neighborhood redevelopment discussions, and I was present for the July and August Community Benefits Agreement, or CBA, meetings. I have heard the same handful of CBA supporters angrily demand that a non-existent coalition of U-City organizations oversee millions of dollars of redevelopment funding based on a legally unenforceable wish list. I've seen the same handful of redevelopment opponents either ignore or profit from the economic disparity that's been hurting the families in our third ward and leaving too many storefronts along Olive derelict and vacant. These naysayers complain about a crisis of trust, yet they accuse others without evidence. Tom Sullivan. They demand accountability, but when I've tried asking them questions, they take offense and refuse to answer. Those who disparage U-City's redevelopment have been notably silent about Olivet's $9.6 million TIF, one block from our future Costco, and Clayton's $147 million TIF, just a short walk from my home. These same naysayers do not
protest. January 3rd, when Olivet voted to double the cost and size of their Olive and 170 project from $37 million for 85,000 square feet to $72 million for 170,000 square feet. Apparently, their vehement TIF objections, countless CBA concerns, and histrionic gentrification fears all stop abruptly at our municipal border. But make no mistake, Olivet and Clayton's redevelopment projects will affect our community. Just without contributing to you city's 0.5% capital improvement sales tax, 0.5% storm parks and stormwater sales tax, 0.25% fire service sales tax, and 0.25% economic development sales tax. Only U City's redevelopment will increase our taxable revenue, provide funding to effectively stabilize Ward 3, and upgrade infrastructure along Olive's International Business District. City Manager, Mayor, and Council members, thank you for taking the time to listen to everyone. I appreciate your hard work on behalf of our community.
Thank you very much. That is the end of our citizen comments on this agenda item. Normally, council members speak on these items during the second and third reading. Is there anything tonight that we need on bill number 9379? Mr. Hales.
I just have one comment, if I may.
Sure.
So back in the back of the room, there is a fancy new camera that is live streaming this and recording all of this. One of the earlier comments I'd just like to address. During the TIF meeting, after the first TIF meeting hearing was literally the day I was sworn into the council. And that meeting, as we all know, was a bit hectic. Immediately following that meeting, I asked our city manager, and I know that I had the overwhelming support of every council member, so that at the subsequent TIF Commission meetings, the videos that were referenced earlier were actually recorded by me and live streamed by me on my cell phone. So I, along with all of us, attended all of those TIF meetings, TIF hearings. And listen, and I also just want to say that many of us attended most, if not all, and I believe I attended all of the Third Ward community meetings. And we all did that because we care deeply for all of our residents, whether you're in my ward in the first or in the second or the third. This effort, we have gone to extraordinary lengths to make this incredibly open, to provide access where access never existed before. And we actually did this whole live streaming in a matter of 2 months this summer. And also along that line, I'd just like to thank Mr. Carlin, who's sitting in the back on the computer. He's been managing all of these meetings. And he, along with so many other staff members, have worked tirelessly through this process. And I just want to recognize and thank them.
Thank you. Any other? Hearing nothing else, I will move forward to council reports and business. Anything from any member of council under this agenda item? Ms. Carr.
I would like to personally thank the Stormwater Task Force for their many, many hours of work and for their talent and for addressing a problem that we've long felt. We've long experienced and of course, lost two of our citizens, too. And I cannot even begin to think about the hours and the effort that you all have made. So thank you so much.
Any other council reports? Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Not as much as a report as an admission of a failed acknowledgement. In the December meeting, I failed to acknowledge Margie DeKemper was rolling off the Senior Commission, not only as a member, but as the chairperson. So I apologize for not acknowledging her service in December, but want to publicly thank her for her service.
Thank you, Mr. Clay. Hearing nothing else from members of council, we can now move into council comments. Council comments from any of my colleagues this evening. Mr. Smotherson.
Well, I just wanted to briefly say this and hope that everybody paid attention, because the issue of one of the items in the redevelopment agreement was brought out, and that was in reference to eminent domain. But one of the things that I want to say to everybody in this room and to this entire city is that I'm hoping that people remember and understand that this development is new to not only this council, but this city. There has never, that I can ever think of, and I've lived here over 50 years, a development of this magnitude in this city. So this is new. And there's some growing pains that we're going to have to, and I mean pain, because hearing the things that we have to hear and the complaints that we have to hear is not pleasant. But that's part of being in this seat and taking on the responsibility that all of these people on this dais have accepted. Again, there are things that we're learning, and we're actively learning those things every day. So please forgive us, or don't forgive us. But, you know, and I'm big enough and bad enough to accept any complaints and any problems or issues that you have. So, again, all I'm asking is that you understand and talk to us, because we're learning this and we're all doing this together. So thank you.
Ms. Carr?
Thank you, Councilmember Clay, for reminding me. I'd like to thank Tom Sontag for serving on the Urban Forestry Commission for many years, as well as being the chair. And I'd also like to thank Kathy Stanley for the many years that she put in to the Park Commission and the work that she did. I'd also like to thank the Public Works Department for undertaking a heroic job with all of that snow. We have 81 miles of public streets, and if yours didn't get done late Friday night or early Saturday morning, please forgive, because they were working overtime and came back and did some streets all the while it was snowing. So I don't get a chance very often to say thank you to the staff, but in this case, thank you. Many of us were not able to get out and wouldn't have been able to get out without their help. I'd also like to remind people that there will be a ribbon cutting and a hard opening for skiff and launch at 8100 Olive on the 22nd of January, the day after Martin Luther King Day, at 11 o'clock. And I do celebrate all new businesses, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, or anything else you can think of that the owners are involved in. Welcome to University City. I'm happy that you want to bring your viable business here. So I hope you will join us. I said right from the beginning this was kind of a family thing, because Nina Gonchi is my sister-in-law, and I'm thrilled that she wanted to come to University City. I'm excited. So if you have the time, stop by.
Mr. Hales?
Thank you. I echo Ms. Carr's comments on the snow removal. It was a little bit slow, but it was a lot of snow, and I was thrilled to see how many neighborhoods Sunday morning had been really quite thoroughly plowed in the overnight hours into Sunday. So the Friday before Christmas, a lot of folks, I think, were at Christmas parties and that kind of thing, I went on my second police ride along, which was just a tremendous experience. I think anybody who has not done, we've talked about the police, Citizens Police Academy, should do that. To
to be out there for 6 hours or whatever it was on the evening shift and see our police officers do their work firsthand. There's really nothing to compare that to. I continue to be incredibly impressed, and I would just like to thank Officer Belcher, who tolerated me for all that time. He was very, very nice. Finally, I was very pleased to have the opportunity to go down to Jeff City, which I have never done, for a swearing-in of our new state senator, Brian Williams. And so congratulations to him. And, of course, he is a University City resident. That was a really wonderful experience, sort of like going back to grade school and getting a civics lesson. It was very cool. So thank you.
Hearing no other council members, I'd like to take just a moment. I think many of you remember and recognize that one of our citizens passed away on December 23rd. That would be professor and poet Michael Castro, who passed away on December 23rd at the age of 73. As many of you know, Michael was a great poet and performer, published dozens of collections of poetry. In 2018, he published a collection of poetry called We Need to Talk. Its title poem expressed the need to look beyond race, politics, and stereotypes and converse intimately with others. He once said in an interview, "Poetry itself can be a form of activism. Art is a form of activism in today's culture." Michael intended and tried to include everybody in his poetry readings, pushing honest talk, spiritual talk, playful talk. His long career was capped by his appointment as the first poet laureate for St. Louis in 2015. So on behalf of the Council of University City and the residents of University City, I would like to offer our heartfelt condolences to his wife, Adelia, and to his children, Jomo, Darren, and Veronica, and his seven grandchildren. I also hope that as you leave the building tonight, if you didn't notice on your way in, that the front doors of University City are bathed in blue light. They are bathed in blue light as a recognition to bring attention to the plight of those suffering from human rights and in sex trafficking in particular. We were asked to put the City Hall in blue lights, and so we got the front of it done. And so I would tell you that if you get a chance, for those of you who are more social media savvy than me, if you would snap it and put it out, this is simply a recognition of our city that we understand the pain that many others are going through in the world at this time. Allison, I'd like to welcome you as well to University City, and I have the heartfelt thanks of the street department for the amazing work they did Friday and Saturday. I do believe, though, to those who are watching at home and to all of you as citizens, I really do take to heart that we work for every citizen in University City. And one of the things that I hope you'll just pause for a moment, Olivet did one public meeting, one vote, and they were done. We did 1 year, 11 public hearings, and we're still going, and we're still listening. But the one thing I will say again and again and again, we listen, but we may not agree. We simply may not agree with you. And I totally disagree with one of our speakers who said if this went to a vote of the city, what would happen? I think I know clearly what would happen, and I think it was evidenced at all of our hearings. Sitting up on this dais, we don't get the opportunity to just selectively say, let me read from just the people who said this. Because those of you who attended those meetings understood that we had people who spoke in favor of it, people who spoke against it. We had people from University City. We had people from Sunset Hills. We had people from Chesterfield. Everybody got a chance to speak and to be listened to. But it doesn't mean that we agree. And it also doesn't entitle you to treat those that you are dealing with disrespect. We are all trying to do the best that we can. Emotions have ebbed and flowed on this development for the past year, and we know they are going to continue for the next 2 weeks. But that doesn't give anyone carte blanche to attack the integrity of the people who are trying to do the work of this city. Thank you very much, and we are adjourned.